guys, welcome back to Not My Type. This is Jack here. I'm with my friend Jessica.
Hello.
And today we're talking about the movie Saltburn and breaking down the Enneagram types that we see in those characters. It was such a hit. It's getting so many nominations for awards and whatnot. And we both enjoyed the movie so much. It's so bizarre and so strange. And the characters were extremely interesting.
Yep.
And we simply had to talk about them. So for context, too, there's so many things to say. This podcast is obviously going to contain spoilers about the movie Saltburn. So if you haven't seen it yet, I recommend you do because it's really entertaining. But also, if you don't care about spoilers, just enjoy then. But I don't see why you would since we're talking about characters you don't know about. Additionally, we want to clarify that fictional characters are being played by real people. And so the real people have their own typology setups, which is going to complicate the characters that they try to play. So you might not always get like a very clean cut character because people have a real type, you know, like someone's real type is as real as their blood type, in my opinion. That's at least what we see in our data, but you'll get characters who are playing a different type who don't necessarily know how to make the faces for that type.
Yeah, it's especially heavy in like the image area because you'll get a person who is very smiley, but they're supposed to be playing someone cold.
Right.
It's just more confusing.
Right. Or vice versa. You know, there's a good number of movies I've seen where there's like a 3-4 playing a 2-3 and they're not warm enough and they're anyways. But so those are our little disclaimers. For context, if you don't know anything about us, we are running a typing business based on measuring the Enneagram types through behavior. And so we've measured our own behavior as best as we can, comparing with the data that we have. So my type is sexual social 2-3 with 7 and 8 fixes underneath.
And I'm a self-pressed sexual 6-7 with 9 and 4 fixes.
So that's our little context. And we're probably skewing these typings to some degree because we are humans with our own biases. But anyways, this is just a fun conversation. So let's just jump into it as best we can. Do you have any like overall thematic thoughts you want to talk about, Jessica, you feel like we're entertaining or worth discussing?
I'm trying to think of what like the overall movie is doing through the lens of the Enneagram, because it's very sexual. There's a lot of sexual characters, and it's a lot about diving into that sexuality, even when it becomes a little bit social blind.
Yes.
But it has a lot of social in between, like about the play in between the characters, all the relational dynamics, how people are affecting other people. It's really more of a self-pres blind movie.
Totally
actually.
Agree. I agree. Because it's also about like wealth and like excess and the way that those things kind of destroy you or like do you wrong. And you get a lot of like commentary, I think, in the movie and from the director and writer, Emerald Fennell, who we'll talk about her type in a second too. There's just a lot of commentary, I think, on like the wealthy upper class of like old money England and how you can't really be a part of it, even if you want to. And this is, so for anyone who hasn't seen the movie that is a little bit interested, that the main theme is that there's this main character who's somebody's Joe Schmo who befriends this beautiful, popular, rich boy at Oxford in 2006. And he goes home with him for the summer because he tells him that his parents are dead or his dad's dead and his mom's an alcoholic. And so he's like, woe is me. I'm never going home. And his friend Felix is like, okay, sure. Come home with me and see my family and whatnot. And from there, like they have a really interesting friendship and he starts developing relationships with his family members too.
Quietly eats all the holes away in the fabric.
Right. So like basically the gist of the movie is like, if you don't know it too well, this main character like shows up as just sort of like wanting belonging. And in the end he like kills all of them to win their money and win their super gorgeous mansion.
Yeah, so all the comments on wealth and stuff like that feel very social self-pres, but then there's sexual surrounding that everywhere, which is interesting. Most movies, you kind of stick with the social self-pres. You kind of stick with the preachy, like...
this is the message. This is the intended.
Yeah, woe to the rich and yay for the poor. Whatever, I don't even know.
Right. So the director, Emerald Fennell, she's my favorite type. So we call it Dream Man around this place. Because it's kind of like a Prince Charming character, which is social self-pres, 3-2, 7-6, 1-9, which sounds like really needless. Like, why are you adding all the wings? But it creates a very specific flavor because 3-2 core is very charming, but you add that social dominance and the attention is on like people and it's elevated and refined. And then 7-2 is so playful, but then you get this like one gut at the bottom that's so like principled and mm-hmm. precise. And so I think a lot of her intention in making the movie is very, I don't know, it feels like she's trying to comment on the sexual blindness of the world, which she can see because she's very aware of, like, the appropriate rules of the game, I think,
yeah.
which is very social enterprise.
You can also see the 7-in-1 link applied to the social here, where, like I said before, you're getting, like, the whole scope. Like, it's not just social self-pres, it's all these other stackings, too. Because she's really, she comes off as a person, like, who knows her stuff, extremely competent, and it just feels like a really good in-depth dive, albeit even if she's sexual blind, into all of the deeper, more darker points of humanity.
Well, I think it also makes sense, too, that, like, so much of this movie is about the sexual instinct, because, like, everyone has it, you know? And so even if your social self-pres, like, lurking just beneath, like, all of your concern about appropriate form and, like, how you should interact and how the world should work, there is this, like, sort of carnal urge to be drawn to something and to be taken by something and to take something, which is kind of, like, a lot of what this... I feel like something that we were commenting on as we were prepping for this episode is how the main character, Oliver, is a very, like, sexual blind character at the beginning, but he, like, ends up using his sexuality to manipulate all of these other characters, which is not really in line, like, with the personality structure of the character, but I guess that's sort of okay. Like, it's just a character. It doesn't have to comply.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, the main character, Oliver, he's really interesting because, like Jack had said, he is doing kind of two different personalities. In the beginning, he's starting out at, like, what we would do, a self-pressed social, 9-wing-1, 6-wing-5, 3-wing-2.
Yeah, it's very, like, mousy. That 9-wing-1, 6-wing-5 flank is so introverted and so small.
Yes. So tiny. And bashful and in the background. But then, like, by the end... It's like a sexual social, like, what did we do for the...
I don't know. He seems like maybe like three-ish, but also like got 5 and 8 underneath, like lots of rejection,
yeah.
like lots of control. But the sort of like, I need to dominate or I need to take this. Like it's an interesting thing because I feel like he's the narrator. Like Oliver's the narrator at the beginning of the movie. Like he has his own little separate like shot where you see him like talking to... the audience, you think at first, but you find out later on he's talking to a different character. But he's sort of narrating what happened and what was happening. And I feel like he presents to the audience, like the character presents to the audience, that all along he was plotting to like kill all these rich people.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a little bit of a feeling of like he throughout the story becomes obsessed with his friend Felix. And that's like an important part of the plot. And he ends up killing him because Felix finds out that he's a liar and is like, we're not friends anymore. And he's like, I don't know. I don't buy that he actually really wants the money or that it was all about taking over the captain's house or like having salt burned to himself. I think it's actually about the fact that like he can't have Felix and so no one can. And so he takes whatever's left of him.
Yeah. My own theory is that it might have started out as a goal for the money, but then he falls in love.
Oh, that makes sense.
And then goes back to his original plan once he just can't have it. And which is also interesting too, because he's playing a sexual blind character at that point, but the whole sexual instinct of like if... And the rejection piece for that we see with rejection types, like, if I can't have this character, no one will.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's a possession thing, which is really interesting.
Which doesn't fit with 9 at all, but
no,
it's okay.
And I think that's the thing, is that, like, this would never happen in real life. You know what I'm saying? Like, even if you were to get a person who behaves like that, they wouldn't be a 9 at the beginning of the movie, you know?
No, they would be, like, because 3s can do a lot. Like, typing 3s are hard because of how well they can mirror things, but there's no way a 3 would show up this small as he does in the beginning of the movie.
Right. But so, that doesn't really matter too much, but it's fun.
Yeah.
I love these other characters are also so interesting. Like, I think Oliver is an interesting character to watch, but it's frustrating to me as a typist, like the incongruous nature of typing him. But let's talk about Felix, because I think he's like everyone's favorite character because he's pretty. Yeah, he's fun. But
he's so fun, that fun guy try.
Right. I think he seems very self-pres blind. Like, he fits in this like very aware of the social world. Like that scene where Oliver doesn't have any money at the bar and he like is watching him and tracking and able to jump in there and identify like he doesn't have anything. He's feeling awkward. He's feeling uncomfortable. He has to buy this thing. He's like very conscious and considerate of other people.
So Prince Charming.
It's very Prince. Yeah, it's very 3-wing-2.
3-wing-2. Yeah.
Right. But I would do social sexual because it feels very like it's like those waxing stackings, like not very elevated. If you don't know about the term waxing or waning, we use those terms to describe two sort of directional functions of the instinct stackings. We've done some podcast episodes on that specific topic, so you can go look at those if you want to learn more about that, or you can check out our website for an article I wrote called The Instinctual Cycle, where I sort of break down how each of them have a very different feel. But sexual self-prez, self-prez social, and social sexual are what we call the waxing stackings, which is just very much like in the moment, in their experience. And Felix's character is very much that way. It's very, very in the moment. He's not making comments on something broadly. It feels kind of right. I mean, because the only other option would be sexual social, but he doesn't feel elevated like that.
No, he feels like he's either, he's with his friends, he's partying, he's upset about something, he's embarrassed, like, it's just all in it.
Right, and I like the sexual instinct being secondary for him, because he has that sort of very flirty, flippant quality that social sexual has.
Yeah.
And he has also got, like, I would do 9 second and 7 at the bottom, too, because he's very fun.
And he feels very head last. Like, he's just, and he's, you know, that mirroring link is just, can be very nice to look at.
Well, the head lastness, too, right, like, head last feels very, there's none of that sort of electric nervousness, you know?
Yeah, it's instead, a slower quality, even despite a fast head space like 7.
Right. So I think that, like, that archetype, I have someone who literally is that type in my life, Connor, if you're listening, we love you. but that social sexual 3-wing 2, 9-wing 1 is a very interesting combo, because 3-wing 2 and 9-wing 1 are, like, two of the most common fixes, and they're so, like, normal, and just, like, we call that the nice guy link. Like, it's very functional, but
it's,
you get
kind of small too.
It is small, yeah. But then you get this sort of like flirty, playful quality.
Yeah. But the enlargement of social sexual, it's
the energy center.
It's a weird combo.
And it's also, I think, like the over availability of it is part of why he just, like, I've noticed with self-pressed blinds in past, like, that we asked for an interview, like, remember that lady on the street whose name we won't utter, but like, We met someone on the street who was a super wacko type. She had rainbow hair. She was like 80 years old. And I was like, hey, would you do an interview for our research? This is way back when we were like starting to really collect a lot of interviews and trying to figure out how to identify the types. And she was self-preservation blind. And there was the self-preservation instinct sort of is like, it's self-protective by nature. And so there's like a wall between self and other. And this woman like had no hesitation saying yes. She'd never met me. Yeah. We'd never spoken to each other. And she just immediately said yes. And I think that's part of like what happens with, Felix's character is that, like, not only does he not have a 6-fix, so he's not suspicious enough, but he's also self-pressed blind. Like, he is over-available to Oliver, who he, like, just relentlessly trusts, and in
who
the end...
he shouldn't have.
Right, he shouldn't have trusted, because Oliver ends up killing him, but...
Yeah. No, speaking from, like, a self-pressed dominant person, the self-pressed blind stackings feel... I like the word over-available. It's like, wait, 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 this is too much. Like, and that's totally what Felix is. He's just open.
Yeah, he's so open and so playful. And then, okay, who should we talk about next? We could talk about, do we want to do his mom or his sister next?
Elspeth is
okay. Elspeth is my favorite character in this movie. She's
ridiculous.
Rosamund Pike, I was watching her, I was watching interviews of her just trying to type the actress who plays Elspeth, Felix's mom. And she's some sort of like, sort of more assertive 3, like feels very like in the moment. But, what's really interesting is that her character in this movie is so hexad, like so off the triangle. She's so not adapting her behavior.
Which makes her funny.
It makes her very funny. I would do, I see sexual, I see sexual social. Like she has that sort of sexual diving into the other quality.
And some of the statements she makes are very bomb-like. Like your favorite with Pamela.
Which one?
When she says Pamela like killed herself. Like. She didn't do anything for attention.
She'd do anything to get attention.
In the theater, you laughed, like, louder than anyone.
I did? Oh, gosh. This is embarrassing. It was so funny. She'd do anything. Yeah, but anyways. She Sexual Social has this sort of, like, very floral, very pleased with itself quality that Elspeth totally has. She feels, like, very, I don't know, is princessy the right word? Or, like, what would you use for that?
I don't know, but, like, the polarizing statements fit with that. But, yeah, there's an elegance, but it's the electricity that's going to polarize, which separates it from something like social self-press. Because social self-press can also be elegant.
Yeah, but it's not
something
zappy.
Yeah, there's something zappy about her.
The only other option I would see for her instinctually is social sexual as well. Because she does do a lot of social talk.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? She's totally not sexual blind in that you can see the way she sort of peacocks herself and like adorns herself all the time. And
she
provokes.
Looks like she's going after Oliver at some point.
Right. There's this weird like sexual tension that she doesn't seem to be at odds with. You know what I'm saying? She doesn't seem to be like trying to suppress it to be sexual blind and inappropriate. She's just like playing into his flirtatious. I mean, even like the line that they put in the trailer where she's like, I used to be a lesbian for a time. Like, she's just, like, oversharing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And the self-pressed blinds are so oversharers because there's none of this, there's no gate, like, keeping privacy around, like, your world.
Yes.
You're just, like, sending it outward. So she could be social sexual, I suppose, because she does spend a lot of time, like, talking with her friend Pamela, like, gossiping about people the whole movie. But then, like, when she first meets Oliver, when he gets invited to Felix's house and he comes back with him, she, like, the first thing she does to him is, like, she runs up to him and, like, grabs his hands.
She pulls him in.
Which is very much like Drew Barrymore, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Who's another 2-wing 3. Oh, we didn't really get to the type yet. But we see, I see 2-wing 3 with 7-wing 6 second. Like, that 2-7 link is very over-friendly, over-playful, quirky, engaging. But Drew Barrymore is, like, that same self-pressed blind 2-7 lead, which is, like, so big, so in your business.
Yeah.
And then probably, like, a 1 gut at the bottom for...
Yeah, we were going back and forth between 1 and 8. It's not 9.
Yeah.
Because she's just so not... She's so okay with transgressing boundaries.
Right.
You know, for whatever reason.
Well, also on top of it, she doesn't feel, like, that loose, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, she feels... Her body is uptight.
Yeah, I would do 1 gut probably. But anyways, it's that 2-7-1 try is so... It's actually so wacko and hard to find. Like, despite
really
the fact
is.
That I think... 2 and 7 and 1, I would have assumed that they would be the most common hexad structures.
They only have a handful.
Yeah, they're not common statistically. The 2-7-8 try, which is my try, is more common, I think, than 2-7-1. But it's a super interesting character. Let's talk about Phoenicia then.
Yeah,
she's such fine. What do you have to say about her? What do you think about her?
She's snaky. Just like the whole, like, I'm going to go outside and I'm just going to walk in front of the, you know, Oliver's room with this dress and, like, kind of wait.
Well,
I've been waiting.
It's like that line, too, where he comes out to, like, come see her and they're about to do something very naughty. And she's like, you're presumptuous. And he's like, well, you're outside my window in a see-through nightdress. And she said, I can go wherever I want. This is my house. And he's like, and you want to be outside my window in a see-through nightdress.
Which is why we like 7 for her.
Yeah.
The woman just does what she wants.
Yeah, she's very hexad. She's not really obeying anyone. Mm-hmm. But it seems like sexual self-pres. She has that, like, dirty feel of the social blinds, but totally, like, sexually available. Like, it doesn't feel as closed off as your stacking does.
Yeah. No, she's open and ready, yeah.
But that sexual self-pres, it's like a raw, sort of bloody quality.
It's also, she's, like, constantly spilling out of herself, like, in the bathtub scene. And I know she's very drunk, but it's just this, like, blah, blah, blah. And she's just, like, is, like, unveiling and, like, unloading everything onto Oliver, who's
right.
going to kill her. And it's just like a... Because we find that's, like, probably one of the most, like, spilling over stackings because of the social blindness.
Yeah, there's not an awareness of, like, what's the rule book or what should
I
share.
What's appropriate here, yeah.
And she also kind of is, like, separate from the family in a way that feels social blind.
Yeah, she is,
like, at the very first scene, you meet the family holistically. Like,
she
they're
is,
all in
separate,
one room,
yeah.
and she's,
yeah.
like, doing her own thing
that's
in a different
point,
room.
Yeah.
And then she shows up when she wants to and doesn't say anything. She doesn't say hello to Oliver. She doesn't, like, introduce herself. They've never met. And she's just, like, smoking a cigarette in the back of the room, and she, like, just comes up and starts watching. So I would do 7-wing-6 core, but she has that 9-wing-8 feel secondarily as well, which is, like, very relaxed. Like, I'm lazy, but I'm allowed to be. Like, that's 7-9, especially with, like, the 8-wing on the 9, feels very, I don't know, like, self-indulgent in a way. But it's like limp and lazy. It's like,
but also positive. Like, everything's going to go her way.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
True. That's really true. And then probably...
Until it doesn't.
Probably 3-wing-2 at the bottom. I don't know. She's nice, but it could be 3-wing-4. It's not...
Yeah, it's hard with that stacking.
She doesn't fit the
blind.
She doesn't fit the 7-9-2 try. She doesn't fit the 7-9-4 try.
Yeah.
It's probably 3. But she's very... And she has that sort of, like, hidden surfer dude quality of the 7-3-9, 7-9-3
try. Very chill.
Who else are we talking? Oh, their dad is interesting. He's like...
James.
Because he's, like, the one oddball. Like, all of these other characters... have sexual all up in their stacking, you know.
Yeah, and also lots of hexad.
Very lots of hexad, yeah. And he's, like, 6-wing-7, like, very,
very
self-pressed
small.
Social. He's very grounded and, like, practical and nervous, you know.
Just trying to keep the peace.
Yeah, I would do self-pressed 6-wing-7. And then probably, like, 3-second, 9 at the bottom, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's tricky for these characters because a lot of them you don't get a lot of screen time with, you know.
Yeah.
And we're trying to, like, compare them to our data set, you know. And they're not even, like, real people. So you're just kind of guessing, like, what does this person feel like? Or what structures am I seeing here?
Yeah. And Duncan's fun.
Oh, Duncan the butler.
The weird butler.
Well, I love to... Jessica pointed out something really helpful, which is that, like, Duncan's character archetype is very alien. You know, like, there's something very odd about what he's doing. And when Oliver first shows up at Saltburn, like, Duncan is, like, very kind of stiff and stark.
So awkward.
Unwelcoming.
You're like, I don't know what's going on. Is this person bad?
No. Right. And then Felix shows up and he's like, stop scaring my friends.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would do, like, probably... 1-wing-9 core for him, like, very grounded self-press social. What would you do?
Yeah, and then maybe, like, 3 and 5 fixes underneath just to give him that full robotic.
Oh, he's so robotic.
Yeah.
He's so flat. Yeah, 1, 3, and 5, like, totally neutral.
Yeah.
There's no real affect to that. Who else could we talk about? There's
Farley.
Farley's character is particularly interesting to me because he was the one character I didn't feel like had enough nuance. I felt like he was just kind of one note, which is like just mean.
Yeah, he doesn't really change.
And there's not enough about him to like make him sympathetic, except like his mom is poor, but I don't really feel bad for him for that. Like,
no, his mom... I don't either. It's so mean.
No, but his mom isn't even that poor. She's like been funded by this super wealthy family because yeah. Farley is like Felix's cousin, you know. And anyways, he's like, he's overtly mean girl flavor. It's like we saw the 4-7-8 try for him.
Yeah.
Just like specifically in that order, because he has that 4-7 up front, which is like very sort of bratty and playful, but...
And like the dark and light mess. Yeah, he has that whole like high highs and lows of 4-7.
Right. Like he has a bad attitude, but then he's also like having a good time at the bar and like very playful and fun.
I think that's why I'm so unsympathetic toward his situation, is because in terms of like, yes, his mom is poor, but he is like living it up and doing all this coke. Like, just right. Like, you're not really working hard for, like, if you came out of a bad situation, like, you're, like, in, like, the rich of the rich right,
right.
now.
Right. And Felix know? Also comments on how he, like, gets kicked out of every school. And I think it's because he's triple hex ad, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
he just,
he's just doing what he wants.
He has that 7-8 link, too, which is, like, very offensive and kind of, like, catty and
it's bratty.
It's bratty, yeah. And it's also got, like, this prankster energy to it. Like, remember when yeah. He pretends to sort of sidle up to Oliver when Oliver's trying to, like, goad him into... Like, Oliver's trying to sort of, like, win him over to manipulate him at one point. After overhearing a conversation that Farley has with Felix about, like, how his mom's poor, and Felix is sort of threatening to, like, revoke any financial support from his dad's side. And so Oliver kind of sidles up to him and is like, hey, if you ever need me to, like, talk to them, they don't understand us because we're just, like, poor Joe Schmoes. And Farley's like, okay, sure. And then immediately, like, they're doing a karaoke party or something, and he goes and turns on a song for Oliver. It's called, like, Rent. And, like, the hook of the song is, like, I love you, you pay my rent. And he, like, makes him sing that.
Yeah, he's mean.
He's really mean. He's an awful character. And I think, like, I think he's fun because he's such a weird type.
Yeah.
But you don't get enough... I didn't have a reason to be invested in him as, like, a character who could have goodness in him. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care that... Oliver
oh,
screws
like
him
one
over.
Flavor. It's just
right.
one.
It's yeah. one flavor, which yeah. is just bratty, mean girl
yeah.
quality.
Yeah, who wears a minotaur head thing. I don't even know what that was.
No, but... it was like a horse head.
Oh, yeah, it was a horse head. Yeah. Yeah, it was hard with the gut because he's so tall. So he's intimidating.
Right.
But it was, I don't know, it felt a little bit like overcompensating at that point.
And it also feels, like, his character feels very social suppress as well, because there's this sort of elevated, like, He's very socially exclusive, and Social 4 is, like, so picky
yes.
about, like, who's in my group, who isn't. And when Oliver shows up, there's this sort of...
There's disgust.
There's disgust,
yeah.
and it's like a, you don't belong here. You
yeah.
know,
you're
not...
poor. This is not your social box.
Right,
yeah.
right. There's a lot... Like, oh, right, there's that one comment where he's like, oh, this is a rented tux, right?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you're almost passing.
You yes, know? Or even, like, the, this is your turn to do shots. Hopefully, like, you can't afford it, and then you're out of here. But, like, this is your turn, and I'm not bending for you.
Right, he's using, like, yeah. a social principle to, like, make Oliver feel
yeah.
awkward. He's like, hey, that's what you're trying to get out of your drink that you should buy for all of us. And,
yeah.
you know, it's interesting. It's
yeah.
It's also intriguing, too, because I think that he feels like a social type in that he's, like, always watching people, you know? Like, he's very aware of where people are going, what they're doing, and he's, like, kind of in on the drama. Which is
yes.
very, like when... Oliver goes outside to, like, seduce Venetia. Farley's watching them, which is, like...
Why are you
also, that's so weird. Like, that's your cousin. Like, why are you watching?
It's, like, 4 o'clock in the morning.
But the characters, yeah, it's really interesting. Anyone else we should talk about that's worth discussing? Oh, let's talk about his weird friend, Michael. Oliver's weird at the very
yeah.
beginning. He was like, just give me a sum and I'll do it. And then he doesn't. He, like, screams at him.
Give me a sum. Yeah.
It's like the first
very
day of school.
Scary.
Yeah, he feels very five-ish. Like, the character's
yeah.
supposed to be, like, a hyper nerd archetype who also is not a triangle type. Like, he's not adapting himself
no.
to his environment.
And he's just going into one thing, just math. Give me a sum.
Which
math,
is very five.
Math.
You know, like,
yeah.
I'm going to specialize in this one particular thing and become the best at it.
Yeah.
And I think he's got 3 second. Like, he has this sort of boastful quality to him when he's like, I want to show off that I'm really good at this.
Mm-hmm.
But he also then, like, screams in the middle of the cafeteria, which I would attribute, like, I would guess, like, 8-Wing-7 Gut has this, like, very expansive quality.
Yeah.
Which would be
for
weird.
For that hot second.
Right.
You know.
For that hot second.
Yeah.
But he also is kind of, like, punitive for Oliver later on. Like, when Oliver starts, like, adapting and trying to win Felix's favor, Michael does not hesitate to be like, you've changed. Like, you're fake.
Yes, and I also like the heavy rejection of, like, the jealousy of, like, when Oliver is leaving. He's like, it's not gonna, you know, he's just gonna throw you away. Like,
there's a reactivity in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, a threat. And he doesn't fit that 5-3-9 try, you know, which is like so loose and introverted.
It's too loud for
nor does he
that.
Fit 5-3-1,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's an interesting character. Oh, and then my other favorite character, Pamela.
Pamela.
We need to talk about Pamela. Poor Pamela. I love the way that Pamela is talked about. And then also the scene where she's like at the dinner table, like the first night Oliver's there and she's saying like how she was dating that Russian man from rehab. She thought, I didn't know the Russian word for whore, so I thought he was like speaking lovely poetry to me.
Poetry, yeah.
Which is actually kind of speaking to the Forfix in her. You know, that sort of like, that romantic idealized, like, it's very unrealistic, it's not practical.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. I like that.
And yeah. It's also very like, woe is me energy. She has the whole, we were landing on like, maybe self-prosocial, maybe a social type, I don't know. But she's not social blind. Like, 9-wing-1... And then 4-wing-3 second, because she has that, she's known for being fashionable, which she also has this like sad archetype to her.
Yeah, she has the aesthetic too.
And then probably 6-wing-7 at the bottom. But like that 9-4-6 try, she totally fits that droopy flower.
Yeah, the droopy flower try of just woe is me, I'm going to complain. And but still, attachment. Like, she's definitely attached to Elsbeth.
Right. She's not a frustration core.
Yeah.
The attachment to Elsbeth is really interesting because Elsbeth as a 2 is like all too excited to like take her under her wing.
I know, but then that dinner conversation where she's like, well, I don't have to go. And Elsbeth is like, no, you could go.
You must be so sick of us.
Yes. So like, Pamela is totally doing attachment there where she's moving her position and like Elsbeth is like directing the flow. Like, no, you can do this. No, I thank you, dear. It's so two-ish. Like, so sweet. But it's like, you need to stop living with me now. I'm putting up a boundary.
Right. But none of it's said clearly. You know what I'm saying? It's all done indirectly, which is so like part of 2. Like, yeah. I need to be your angel. And so I'm not allowed to say something selfish. So even if I want you out of my house.
This is for you ultimately.
Right. Well, and she keeps reframing everything positively, like that 2-7 link is like so, it's so optimistic, but it's also so like about you. So when Pamela's like, I might have found a place to live in, she's like, well, it's really more of a bed sit, which is just like one room. And then Elspeth is like, oh, I loved living in one room in my 20s. Like,
that sounds horrible.
Much less to clean.
I know.
Right. It's an
positive
interesting
reframe, hardcore.
Yeah. Are there any other characters? I guess not. I think we really exhausted it. Well, if you didn't see Saltburn, you should, because it's really funny.
Yes, and we were, the 2 times that I saw it, it was in a theater packed with younger people. And the scenes that were kind of shocking did have a very big effect on the audience, which was really interesting. There were a lot of like, stop, which I thought was hilarious. Or no, or like people just like laughing out loud because they were so uncomfortable they didn't know what to do.
Right,
you know?
There's a real like tangible sexual blindness to the audience, you know, just because of statistically like most people being sexual blind.
Yeah.
And I remember like when you and I saw it together, I was watching the 2 of us who are not sexual blind, just like totally willing to tolerate these like very obsessive, weird.
I missed like all like the gasps and like the, like, oh, it was too much. And I really liked, because we were watching the director talk about this, where she said there were at some points where people are just like, I can't go with you here. Like, no, like, this is too much.
Right. And that's like what she was going for, which is interesting.
Yeah, which was really cool, because I like her being social self-pres, but it's almost like she's dipping and playing around and like kind of poking at like, what is the sexual instinct? You know, like, how far is too far? Because some of them were things that I kind of have a hard time relating to, even though I totally get like what's like the desire behind it, but that's what it felt like. It felt like she was competently like kind of messing with it and be like, hey, what can I give the audience, how will they react? And she got reactions, which was really fun.
She got a lot of reactions, and I think that's why it like did so well, you know, because it was so provocative in the film.
I love the Greek mythology references.
Oh, right. Yeah,
that was so rich.
I loved that was actually when I knew that Felix would die, is at the party when he's wearing those gold wings. I knew it was Icarus imagery, and I was like, he's gonna die.
It took me so long.
I love that though. That's great.
I know. It wasn't, I didn't know it was going on until the very end. Maybe because I'm leading with 6-wing-7 and 9-wing-1, and I just will believe anything you say. But like, even when he's narrating, when she's dead in the bathtub, and he's like, well, she was just so sad. And I was like, oh, she was so sad, she killed herself. And it was just so obvious at that. Yeah, Venetia, sorry.
Right,
yeah, his
right.
sister, and didn't click until the end, like almost near the end, you know.
It's also interesting too how like Felix, who's like the symbol of the Cattons for Oliver, like dies in the middle of the maze, you know, like like once Oliver has finally like wended his way through this labyrinth, like and he's at the very heart of it, and he kills like the symbol of this family.
And also the cinematography of the screenshot, like you're looking up at the statue, which is just, it just feels very like social self-pres, and like this is like, don't know, she feels like epic or idealistic in some way.
She had one shot that was like literally an aerial view of the maze where when he's dead and Elspeth finds him.
Oh, yeah.
And then you see Venetia and Farley like running through the maze and they're going like every which way to try and get to the center of it.
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes was that dinner scene at the end after Felix dies, and you have everyone awkwardly sitting around the table, and Farley and Venetia are like just like losing it, and Oliver is able to keep it together, and the James, the dad, is like forcing this keeping together. And just as an attachment type, when you're having an emotion but you don't want to make yourself stick out, especially leading with like the rabbit link for me, and feeling the pressure to like hold it all in despite the fact that something very bad is going on, I just really resonated with that.
That's interesting too, because like Venetia and Farley are both super hex heads, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, and they can just cry, good for them, you know?
Right. Like,
and it's just hard to do that as attachment when like the atmosphere is not giving to that, where it's not socially okay, or you're just confused about it.
Right, and there's also like a resistance to being really disrupted by a disruptive event, you know, which I think is part of like Sir James's like sexual blindness as a character. Like he's not really getting hit by the event. Like he's still keeping it in check.
Right. Yeah.
It's very controlled.
Yeah. You need the self-rest stability. I need this to go a certain way.
Right. And that's why like when Farley's like, can I be excused? He's like, no, sit down. You're going to eat this pie. Like it's lunchtime. It's very, it's very much like, he's doing anything he can to feel like the world is normal, even after Felix has died.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing, too, that I think is, like, a tribute to Emerald Fennell as a writer and director, like, her 7-1 link is obvious in the way that she's so intentional about, like, the foreshadowing she gives. Like, there's one scene early, like, the first meal Oliver has at Saltburn where, like, they're talking about some guy who, like, he has, like, a doppelganger who, like, passes through a window or something. Do you remember this?
No.
And basically it's like foreshadowing his death. And as they're unpacking that, like they're discussing this topic at the dinner table or breakfast table, I guess. Like Jacob Elordi, who plays Felix, like walks in the background past this window, which is foreshadowing to his death.
Oh, cool.
So I knew he was going to die really early. I just didn't know specifically that Oliver was going to kill him until later in the
movie, it would have been like a tragic like love story or something.
Right. But it is a tribute to like how far ahead like this director is like planning this, you know what I'm saying? Like she's seeing this broad vision and then she like drops in little hints throughout the movie.
Yeah.
I like
that when they're actually well hidden, so you actually have to go back and see.
It's really subtly done too, that like that moment where he walks by the window. But they're talking about it at the same time, so if you're looking for it, you can kinda catch it. It was jarring. I think another really interesting theme is about how, like, when people get ejected from this world of, like, lavish beauty, it's not really addressed. Like, when Pamela gets kicked out, Oliver brings her up, and Elspeth is, like, surprised. She's like, oh, Pamela's not here. Like, she was taken out this morning. And there's this reference later on, like, it shows up again when Farley gets kicked out, because Oliver frames him for, like, having tried to steal something. When Farley gets kicked out, like, he and Felix and Venetia are talking about it, like, by their little pond, and the parents are coming out, and Oliver says to them, like, what if they bring Farley up? Like, what do I say about it? And they say, all they say is they won't. Like, they won't bring him up. And it's a great tribute to, like, I guess about, like, how Elspeth, as this, like, triple hexad, double positive right up front, like, she sets the tone for the family in a lot of ways. And she really is so self-involved and so refusing to see anything dark that, like, she's not going to bring up Farley, and she doesn't. Instead, like, she shows up and she starts talking about, like, she's like, oh, this song, like,
the weather.
I was friends with these really famous people, and
she talks about herself.
It's very funny. Yeah. I love too, like, this, the avoidance of depth is like a really interesting and important theme, I feel like, for Elspeth's character. Because even in that same scene, she's talking about, like, everyone thought this song was written about me, but it's about this girl who was all into these very intellectual concepts. And she says, which could never be me because I've never wanted to know anything. Like, I've never had any interest in, like, uncovering or learning something.
Yeah.
You know? It's, like, so opposite of the sort of, like, raw, bloody underbelly of the movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's a foil to, like, the hidden theme of, like, darkness beneath all of it.
And also the ignorance of that and the consequences of them, of that. They're turning, like, a... Like, maybe they could have analyzed it a little bit more. Were they more accepting of Felix's death and, like, what that meant? They could have figured out things. But it's like, no, let's hush this. And so you don't figure out that someone actually killed him here. You know?
Right. It's really... It's very intriguing about the nature of power as a theme in this movie. and how much of that power is like manipulable to yeah. sexual charm. You know what I'm saying? That's really what it is. Is like,
that's cool.
Oliver uses sexuality to like totally upend this very static collected system. A note to the self-pressed blindness of Elsbeth and Felix too, as characters, is the way that like Oliver's birthday party is like 200 people he doesn't know. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yes.
It's really Elsbeth's party.
I know.
That has nothing to do with Oliver.
Oh, that was like, so sad.
At one point, like, when they're singing happy birthday to him and, like, no one knows his name. It's a great illustration of, like, I think of how the self-pressed blind world is so different than the sexual blind world. You know what I'm saying? Like, Oliver's managing his little life, trying to just, like, get control of his studies or whatever. Whatever he's presenting to us.
Yeah.
But Elsbeth is really deeply engrossed in her world of relationships and all the friends that she does or doesn't have. And
I agree with what Farley says to Oliver, which is like, you don't belong here. He doesn't. He gets it. But he does not. He doesn't do the whole... He doesn't do what they're... He does something else. I think that's why he conquers it, is because he's not of that.
But he can't get in. And I think that's why he kills them all. You know? It's like he can't actually fully belong.
Yeah.
So he has to delete them. And it's like... It's interesting because in an interview when I was typing Emerald Fennell, like trying to figure out what is she doing in her own psyche that is inspiring this movie, a lot of what she talked about was really about that class, about how like British wealth is so old and people are so fascinated by it because you can't have it. Like
yeah.
it pre-exists you, no matter who you are and what generation. Like there was always a generation before of wealthy British people who have owned a bigger house and they have a ton of power because of it.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting theme.
The house is very pretty, too.
It is. Yeah. I love that scene, too, like when you're first getting introduced to the house. Felix gives Oliver a tour, and
yeah.
you don't get to see any of the house. Because
I know, and you want to.
You want to,
yeah.
but Oliver's like so transfixed
room
by...
Green room. Yeah.
He's transfixed by Felix. You know what I'm saying? So his eyes are on Felix the whole time.
Oh, so you're with him. Yeah, that
you're
makes sense.
It's just very... It's a very interesting choice of shot, because there's so much beauty around you, but the viewer doesn't get to see it.
Yeah.
And it's actually very telling about what the movie's about. Because it's not really about the house. The house is, like, symbolic of this boy that he wants to love.
Yeah, it's very social self-pres. It's just, like, the house is the vehicle for the social mess.
Right.
Sexual and all, you know?
Right.
But it's not about the house.
Yeah.
And in the end, it's really not about gaining... I think it's more about the dominance of how he got the house versus, like, the house itself.
Right. Yeah.
But... And the last scene of him dancing through the house is just gorgeous.
It's
so much fun.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
You know, I think he like improvised that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good for him.
I feel like that's something I saw online. I can't remember it
yeah.
specifically, but I don't know. I think this sort of movie is very, I mean, it's very appealing to me too, because like I'm someone who's very interested by that. The very theme that I was just mentioning, like British wealth is very intriguing. You know, like you can't help but be like addicted to this idea of like the mystery of this old money that like is seemingly impermeable, even as like generations change. There's this very mysterious heir to British aristocracy.
Never thought about that. That's cool.
Social life.
Yeah. Like, I want to go back to like that. I've brought this up before, but that one scene you've brought that up where Oliver wakes up in bed and he's just smiling, remembering the night before. Kind of like the moments of where there is like the total loss of self. Like where Oliver is starting to experience that with Felix of just like getting lost in another person.
Right.
That I liked a lot, but
it's a really powerful scene too, because like there's a lot that you don't see, like you don't get to see the night where they first build their friendship until after it's happened. You know what I'm
I
saying?
Know, so you assume, like I assume that they just went home after the drinks or whatever, not realizing that they were together till the sunrise, you know?
Yeah. It's a really cool montage. And the, just to, for me as like a sexual social type, like I've known that feeling of like you find one person you really want to be friends with and you just ingratiate them, like ingratiate yourself into their social world. But it's really just about them. You just want to be with them and know them and be close to them. And it's part of like, I think it's part of what made this movie so interesting to me is that I don't plan on ever becoming a hidden killer of rich people, but this like the infatuation drives Oliver to do really bizarre things, you know, that like the viewer would never consider him doing at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
But I can like he builds a whole fake narrative about his life because he thinks that's what he has to do to get close to Felix.
Yeah. And I also like seeing some of the more extreme behaviors that were surprising to me initially. They made more sense once I knew what Oliver was capable at the end. in terms of like the what you're willing to do, the vitality of it, the passion, the drive. It made more sense in the end.
Well, that's really all we have to say about Saltburn, but if you haven't seen it, you should go watch the movie. I think it's on Amazon Prime right now. It just came out.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. Such a great movie. And again, just like little promo hint, if you haven't gotten typed by us, you should go check out our website, buy one of our typing services where we can actually measure your behavior and prove to you the type that's actually a fact. It's not just an idea. You have a type. It exists. You just probably don't know it yet. You can search my name at Jack Hauser on TikTok, where we make a bunch of really fun, silly memes and also some informative videos. If you don't know your type, that might help you locate it a little bit. And then we additionally have a Facebook group for people who are interested in talking about the Enneagram. From a scientific lens and making just sort of interesting conversation about anything you want to talk about. Like, we could talk about Saltburn characters, you know, or whatever else might crop up in there. So you can search Not My Type Enneagram on Facebook. We also have a link to it on our website. Anything else? Oh, yeah, our website is notmytypeenneagram.com. yeah, I think that's it. Thanks for listening, guys.